You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Hello there, and welcome to this week's episode of the Canadian Philosophy Show. My name is Hale, and with me is Aaron and Brandon.
I'm looking forward to the topic. I titled it The Introduction to Media Theory, so that's what we're looking forward to.
You know what? I actually think that's pretty apt. Brandon, what do you think? Do you think that's probably accurate?
Considering we're going to be talking about Marshall McLuhan, which I think is where most people, if they don't formally begin studying media theory with McLuhan, it's definitely where people first encounter it.
And it's also kind of fun because this is the Canadian Philosophy Show, and McLuhan is like one of the only very well-known Canadian philosophers. You know what? As I say that, immediately Jordan Peterson comes to mind, which, you know, I don't know how I feel about that, but he's pretty famous.
What about Charles Taylor?
So we've got Charles Taylor, Marshall McLuhan, and Jordan Peterson.
Real all-star lineup.
All the all-star lineup.
I'm sure there's a lot more that are going.
There are. McLuhan is interesting, just as an aside, he's actually widely regarded as one of the first real darlings, or like darling philosophers, thinkers of media in particular, which is very fitting because he was a media theorist. But in his heyday, 60s and 70s, we'll get into it more for the audience, he was very well known for doing TV interviews, showing up in movies, being on the radio all the time, which was kind of unusual for a lot of philosophers and very academically minded people of the period. So with that, we've kind of hinted a little bit, we've talked about it a little bit. Why don't we get in a little bit, or I'll get in a little bit with a little bit of an intro on McLuhan. So this is an introduction to media, our media theory for listeners. The way we're going to do that is we're going to look at three core functions of media according to McLuhan. So we'll get into those, but we're basically going to talk through three core ideas in which kind of are come to us in the form of sayings that are quite famous to McLuhan. And then, you know, from that, we'll kind of extrapolate and a good little intros. But for those of you who don't know, as I said earlier, McLuhan was a Canadian philosopher who was particularly influential through the 1960s and 70s. He focused on the philosophy slash, you could call it sociology, cultural studies of media. Often people called him the metaphysician of media itself. For McLuhan, media in all its types is a kind of medium. And a medium was really an extension of the human being or our mode of existence. So not just like the human being in the anatomical evolutionary sense, but in the sense of what a human being is, there are different mediums, and those mediums are effectively extensions of ourselves. We'll get into that. We'll see how that kind of makes sense. Media are particular types of mediums. Before even discussing more current forms of media, we can actually think about two very simple and far more basic artifacts and their mediums. These are actually two that McLuhan used. They're very obvious, and I think they really delineate well what we're going to be talking about here without actually talking about media as mediums. The first one is the wheel. For McLuhan, the wheel is an extension of the legs. It's a reflection of human movement that itself is moved. It's a reflection of human movement that, as human movement, is moved beyond its natural limitations by the extension itself. Human beings have legs, we move around. The wheel really reflects that, but in that reflection, it also radically alters that. It changes radically what we can carry, what we can move, how far we can go, what we can do, right? So it's got this, it's a type of technology, medium, media. They're all very closely related and so in some ways interchangeable. So you could also think about it as a technology. This technology is reflection, the wheel. Really simple technology, been around forever. It's a reflection of human movement. And McLuhan's often, as I said earlier, really likes to look at specific human senses or parts of the human body. In this case, it's the legs. It's a technology that extends that capacity. But in that extension, it also really, really changes what that capacity can do, and therefore really changes how human beings live, who we are in our very being. let's talk about one more medium before we actually get the media. The other one is the electric light. For McLuhan, that's the extension of sight. It's a reflection of human sense, but one that it's in its own function is radically altered again by the extension. So the electric light, you know, we always have the sense of sight. We've always been able to see as human beings, more or less. But the electric light radically changed when we could see, what we would look at, what we would value in terms of what is worth looking at and considering. And again, we can think about all the ways that that's radically changed human existence, right? As in terms of kind of relating to or playing off this super basic sense organ of sight that we is so obvious, so always already there, that we don't really think about it that much. McLuhan himself was very focused on the new media of the 20th century as an electronic communication media, so which we're going to be talking about today. So for in his own time, he was very focused on TV, movies, telephones, radios. But I do want to say that, you know, we live in the era of social media, of the internet, of digital communication, all that kind of stuff. A lot of these observations, these structures translate very well to that kind of stuff. It won't be hard for us to think about that. What we think about the classic 20th century media. He was particularly interested in television. He, like I said, he was big in the 60s and 70s. That was his thing. And for him, television was a radical shift in human existence. It really changed the way we lived. I don't think it takes too much thinking to see that he's not wrong. The television era, as it's often called, you know, really changed the way everyday people live their lives and think and understand the world around them. And probably most importantly, understand who they are. And just as a kind of hint, a lot of these structures, a lot of what we're going to be talking about today, relate heavily or really have their biggest implications in self-understanding in terms of identity, personal identity. As an interesting side note, since this is our introduction to media theory, really, through McLuhan, previous philosophers of media, such as Walter Benjamin and Friedrich Adorno, saw media through a Marxist lens in particular. They saw media in materialist terms as mechanisms of modes of production, which function to construct one kind of material culture or another. I know, Brandon, you and I did an episode on Walter Benjamin a while ago on the live show at the VIU campus. And we don't want to get too much into Benjamin here because that's not what we're talking about. And that's a whole show into of itself. We should do it again. But there's really a focus there with the Marxists in terms of like what sort of material, what sort of media is created by new media, and how does that actually restructure and reconstitute society, and particularly within the context of aesthetic political terms, right? And for Benjamin in particular, during our show, we talked a lot about both Soviet-style communism and fascism and how they used mass media as basically forms of social coercion, social control, and psychological shifting for mass populations and mass movements. That's really, really in opposition to what McLuhan was doing, what McLuhan was focused on. McLuhan's really interesting in that he broke from that kind of Marxist tradition. And rather than looking at media as just a technology, particularly for some sort of political end, but as more as a medium. And again, his terms are kind of interchangeable with McLuhan, but also thinking about technology itself as a medium. But really, in this way, what he really focused on is how media as a technology really shapes humans in their most fundamental being in a new way. And to some people, this is people have actually termed him a pre-post-humanist. So post-humanism is really focusing on how technology in particular is going to shift and change what it is like effectively to be a human being, what in its essence is a human being or what we are. And so in some ways, many people see McLuhan as the sort of precursor to that, really focusing on as individuals, as societies, how does like not really focusing on how it's used, but how the technology itself literally changes us, our social groupings, our self-understandings, both in a communal and personal sense, changing who we are. And that was McLuhan's focus. And so in this way, he was quite non-political. For McLuhan, particular media technologies will have, roughly speaking, the same effects, regardless of whether they're in a Soviet state or the United, you know, capitalist state, the East or West, or wherever they're going to be. The media has a particular way of changing us, and it's unique to that particular kind of media. There's obviously variations in how it might be used, but at the end of the day, it's the media itself that's the focus and not how it's used in a particular political system. So to better understand McLuhan's approach, we're going to look at three aspects that McLuhan thought altered human reality, and I'll just say what they are, and then I think it's a good time to have a chat before I move any forward. But basically, we're going to be talking about what McLuhan termed the medium is the message, will be our first one. And then we're going to be looking at the phrase, we shape our tools, and therefore they shape us. And finally, we're going to be talking about the rearview mirror.
I like the sort of political observation that you make between McLuhan and Benjamin, because it's obvious now, but I hadn't noticed it, so thank you for pointing it out. McLuhan is surprisingly apolitical in his treatment of the way that the medium sort of modifies us. But Benjamin specifically hones in on the political implications of the way that the emerging technologies at the time were changing social organization specifically. So Benjamin's big medium that he focused on was photography. He also talks about film. I don't know if he could have known that there was going to be this explosion of new media, and that's probably why he didn't think of himself as a media theorist, but just as a guy kind of talking about photography and film. He's acutely aware of the way that film organizes societies and the way that production of film organizes the way that capital is organized and used. So I think that sort of analysis doesn't exactly come up with McLuhan is interesting and almost shocking. But yeah,
I think that it's really interesting to point that out, and again, we'll have to do another show on Benjamin because his work is super interesting. But I think in a weird way, when I picture it in my head, you know, Benjamin starts from, and thinkers like him, started from a Marxist perspective, and then basically through looking at the media, found their way back to that perspective. Whereas McLuhan focuses specifically on the media, and I guess McLuhan is so focused on the media, so focused on the technology, that, you know, just by focusing on the technology itself and what its effects are going to be, how it's going to radically change individual society, like we've already mentioned, you know, you can kind of calculate from that point what the most likely political dynamic society is going to be, what one will be able to function within the context of a particular kind of medium, a particular kind of technology, given the facts that it structures the world around us. And I don't think, you know, this is something we were talking about for our listeners just a little bit before the show. McLuhan, if anyone's read McLuhan, people will be very familiar with the fact that he is not the most systematic or, I guess I'll use the word clear sometimes, thinker. He has a lot to say about a lot of different things. And they're basically, it's almost like he's starting with the media and being like, and so it can do this, and it'll do that, and it'll pop over here, and it'll show up over here, and it'll affect this. But it's kind of hard to systematize him in one clear way. And so I think that's kind of why the political side, at least in part, never comes up, is because it's kind of hard for him to get there when you're starting from such an like a systematic place. It's kind of hard to end up being like, okay, well, this is the kind of society we're going to have. Because at the end of the day, he's so focused on what the effects and the controls of the media itself are going to be in all these little tiny different aspects, that it's hard to really see through all that what sort of society, or at least predict. Although some will do, and I think maybe at the end of the show we can talk a bit about that.
I did find the comments at the very beginning about the wheel pretty hilarious, because I recently watched a video on YouTube, actually, about why Africa did not adopt the wheel as a technology. And I found that kind of interesting. This is really kind of ancient technological, or this is, well, very much ancient history. But what's going on here was that they had access to a better technology for their environment, which was the camel. And in areas where it was too rocky, or it was is not particularly a good place to build roads, or there's certain places in Africa where cattle or horses can't survive as well because of certain water, certain insects that kill cattle and kill horses. So wherever it's too wet, you can't have these types of large animals. And where it's too dry, you can't necessarily build roads easily. So the camel was just a better means of transportation. And this is also true for areas like Arabia, that area of the world as well. That was just a better technology for them because they were in a climate and environment that was mostly desert, which is kind of hazardous for a wheel. So it's really interesting to think about how different cultures and different societies live and exist in different environments, and that affects what type of media we use. And sometimes those media are different depending on our own situations.
And I think I totally agree with you, and that's like a really interesting point. And I think it kind of hints at particularly the second the discussion we'll have, which is we shape our tools and they shape us, in terms of like we'll get into it more deeply, obviously, but as you brought up, okay, well, in Africa, it was just made more sense in, let's just say, many parts of Africa to use the camel. It was readily available. You know, it was not a good space for making roads, or the kind of materials that would have been necessary for making wheels and all that kind of stuff were not easily accessible, or not just really not efficient in comparison to something like the camel. So you can kind of say, and that's just why, like, that was just the most efficient technology. But then I think what McLuhan often does is both ask us to take a step back and look at things in more of a microscopic lens, in terms of like, okay, well, if the camel is the technology that we use, then what is the kind of society that we live in, / who are the kind of people who use the camel, right? And in what ways is that world as a whole, both on the individual and societal level, very different from, you know, one that the wheel, like, certainly it's not, I don't think, really unrealistic or outlandish to say that the fact that that technology was central to those societies at those times had radical effects on who people were.
I think that's a good point. And essentially, well, in the video I was watching, the author started out by saying, I don't remember the name, otherwise I would reference it. He started out by saying, a lot of people ask, well, why didn't Africa adopt the wheel? And he kind of says, well, turns it back on them and says, well, why didn't Europeans adopt the camel? Because it was ill-suited to their climate and their environment, is basically his point. So, I mean, there's obviously some distinctions, but it's really interesting to think about that, you know, if in America, they hadn't had the climate, environment, and geography they had, you know, the wheel might not have led to the automotive, and the automotive might not have led to the creation of highways. And highways, of course, are something that's ubiquitous. They're everywhere all over the world today. But that's, I think, the type of thing that McLuhan opens our eyes to see in terms of how media and technology shape our environment.
Yeah, so with that, why don't we get into our first little McLuhan aphorism, first little point, kind of entry into media theory. And I think for a lot of people, this first one really is their initial intro into media theory, because this phrase is become very famous. It's definitely his most famous kind of thought, aphorism, idea, concept, whatever you want to call it. And that is, the medium is the message. And so I've actually got a McLuhan quote. It's from his work, Understanding Media. And McLuhan said, many people would be disposed to say that it is not the machine, but what one did with the machine that was its meaning or message. In terms of the ways in which the machine altered our relations to one another and to ourselves, it mattered not in the least whether it turned out cornflakes or Cadillacs. So that's a quote from McLuhan, kind of expanding on the medium is the message. So to say a little bit more about it, this is McLuhan highlighting a sort of contingency in modern media or media products. What we do with things, what we express in certain media, is not what is most basic or fundamental. We need not focus on the message, for that is contingent, but on the medium, for that is what is basic or fundamental. So what is primary is what the medium does to us. And within that, we find what we do with the media. And so effectively, what we're saying is the medium really is the agent. So human agency is not really paramount, but instead it is a human conditioning. It is humans being conditioned by our own tools. So we kind of said a little bit there, or I said a little bit there about the medium is the message. When I first encountered this, it's a little side anecdote. When my first, unsurprisingly to our listeners, I took philosophy. I was a philosophy major in university. But one of the first classes I actually took was media theory on my first year. And I hated it. I didn't get it at all. I thought it was stupid. And I don't think I was listening very well. I actually later found the abstract for that class and realized that, like, years later, I read like most of the required readings on my own, like just out of interest, because I became interested in that kind of stuff. But I remember the medium is the message coming up very early in the class and being like, what do you mean? It doesn't really matter what is said on TV or what a machine produces or whatever it is. Like, that's ridiculous. Obviously the message is like the message itself. It's what shows up on my, text screen of my phone. It's what the message that the news is trying to put out to me. It's what I read in the newspaper. That's what's most important, right? That's the message. I think though that we can kind of illustrate this a little bit better. I can by using, an example, and I'm going to steal an example because I love this example. And that is an example from Neil Postman, who was a kind of protege of McLuhan and who wrote a very well-known book called Amusing Ourselves to Death, particularly based on McLuhan's ideas, but particularly about in regards to television media. But he used the example to try and extrapolate this of smoke signals. And I think, Brandon, you and I have talked about this on numerous occasions, this particular example. But the point is this particular medium, this form of communication, really highlights what we can and cannot do, and most importantly, how the medium itself dictates what we can say, what we can articulate, and by extension, what is usable, realistic, public discourse. So to think about it, if we lived in a society that only communicated with smoke signals, what would we really be able to say to each other? It's dangerous over here. Can you come this way? We need more food. We've had a plentiful harvest. Could we perhaps articulate critique of pure reason through smoke signals? Or how about even articulate poetic expressions of love or envy or very other human, human emotions, or even abstract ideas about the universe or religious ideas or whatever they might be. This is a really clear example of how the medium dictates what the message is going to be. Not maybe specifically each and every single message every single time, but to think about it more in terms of a field of accessible thinking and communication that makes sense, is reliable, and is accessible within the context of that medium. You can't do hardcore philosophy using smoke signals. In that society, that kind of thinking, that kind of communication does not exist. And by extension, McLuhan's point with the medium of the message, with the phrase medium is the message, is modern electrical media favors different kinds of messaging, different kinds of discourse, discussion, and by extension, personal understandings and relations to oneself and each other in terms of what that media is, right? We've even talked about this. We turned about Kant's Critique of Pure Reason. Both McLuhan and Postman, who I mentioned earlier, were very obsessed with the transition from a typographic culture to a television culture. What I mean by that is basically in the 19th century, in particular, 18th, 19th century in particular, the main form of cultural expression and communication was typography, basically the printing press. That was how people expressed themselves. People thought in those terms. That was how people communicated. And so that tended to require a very particular kind of psychological disposition, which also in terms led to very particular kinds of social understandings and social revolutions as well, right? We can think about the political pamphlet that became very important during that period, right? Which was the real like mover of various revolutionary movements right up into the Russian Revolution and things like that in the late 19-teens. I don't want to say everybody read, because in a lot of societies, people were still heavily illiterate. But people who were culturally invested in what we think about the mainstream societies, everybody read. They read a lot. That was the main form of communication, of cultural exchange, and it led to a very particular kind of world. Thinking again about a world in which something like Kant's Critique of Pure Reason was on the table. I was going to say television, but let's move to the Instagram world, or Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Imagine Kant's Critique of Pure Reason in TikTok format. For our listeners, I can see Brandon and Aaron both kind of laugh because it's not really realistic. Like, that's not really a thing that would happen. And when it does happen, like, there are like weird, like, social media philosophers and stuff like that, you can see how the typographic content has been so radically changed by the media that it's basically just tiny little weird snippets and reinterpretations that are way more about getting views and being accessible on the particular kind of medium than they are about being authentic or close to home to the real source material. I've been kind of rambling on about this for the media's message for about 10 minutes now. So I want to open the floor, but before I do that, I want to just remind our listeners that you're listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show, and we're doing Intro to Media Theory today, and with me is Aaron and Brandon. So medium is a message. Let's stop my rambling. Let's talk about it over the medium of internet, radio, whatever this is. Streaming? Radio streaming?
Yeah, I have a few comments. One quote that I really like is a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson, which is that the years teach much, which the days never know. And that kind of just brings back home your point of how much time you spend with a piece of media kind of dictates what type of relationship you can have with it. When you're invested in a book, you can kind of spend as much time as you want with that media. And depending on how much time you spend, you might have different experiences. And people will choose to spend different amounts of time on a book and have different experiences that. Whereas with television or with TikTok and Instagram, the time you spend watching is pretty much constant, no matter who you are. And you might have some passing thoughts on whatever you watched later, but how you experience that is very different, because you can't stop the television and change the speed in a way that's dynamic. You can't like stop and think about what you're reading when you're watching something. You have to be always engaged, always listening in order to keep track with what's going on.
Bringing up TikTok, I think that's it. First of all, it's a relevant medium right now. It's interesting how you can have different social media platforms, and in a way they kind of constitute these sub-media of the internet or of social media. because they structure the experience a little differently. You bring up TikTok. The thing I think about comparing